But we blasted it out initially as a cash deal, and we didn't have any movement on it. We restructured it, so we were taking the existing debt sub two, and it sold next day.
Creative is creative. Like, creative isn't just about a creative deal like a seller finance or subject two. It's also you thinking outside the box. And the better you're able to think outside the box, the more you can come up with solutions to, you know, make deals work. Guys, I'm really excited about today's video. I've got my partner, Chris Allen, on with us. Chris, thanks for being here with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's exciting to be doing a lot of deals with you. If you guys don't know Chris Allen, he's the largest wholesaler in the Panhandle, the Gulf Coast there in Florida. I think we're averaging, around 150 or more thousand a month right now in wholesale fees. And it's really exciting to be a part of that and see Chris just really exploding in that market here. We're also doing a national dispo service right now that Chris and I are doing, which is pretty exciting. We're JVing with a lot of other people. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that later. But specifically on this video, guys, we wanted to create a very specific video around wholesaling creative financing. And Chris is one of the best creative finance wholesalers that I've ever seen. And I'm not just saying that because you're my partner, Chris. I really think you have a gift for it. It's such a tremendous opportunity right now in the marketplace. Some of these deals that we're wholesaling we're structuring the purchase at market value and sometimes over market value, and then turning around and assigning them for $20,000, $25,000, $30,000, $35,000 in wholesale fees. So it's absolutely incredible to be doing deals like that, where you literally pay retail or over retail, because with creative, again, it's all about the terms, not the price, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But Chris, you know, why are you so excited about creative? What makes it such a hot strategy for you to focus on when it comes to wholesaling?
Yeah, I think it's an amazing opportunity right now, just because of the rate environment we were in. You know, we've had all these super, super low interest mortgages for several years, and then they shot up. And some, you know, people's values have pulled down a little bit. So they don't have a ton of equity in these properties, but they've got fantastic rates. So there's a surplus of those, and you can find them on the MLS, so your go-to original strategy. And if you get good enough with chatting with agents and pitching this strategy, you can, you know, in any market, pick two, three of these up a month straight from the MLS. So that's why I think it's so exciting, is somebody can get into these, you know, deals, you know, with relatively low money, low experience, make a $20,000 assignment fee, and then they had zero marketing spend. So I think it's a really great opportunity if you can get to know the stuff.
Definitely. Yeah. So guys, if you think about it, if somebody bought during the top of the market and now they need to sell, so if you bought in the past 2 years and now you need to sell because you need, you know, relocate for work or whatever the reason is, you're in a tremendous interest rate. The values have come down a little bit, and with closing costs and expenses to sell, you're kind of at a upside down, right? So there's no equity. And that's where, if the seller can wait to get some or all of their money and they're open to creative terms, you can pick these properties up, turn around, and there's such a strong demand on the other side with buy and hold investors, because buy and hold investors don't want to be paying the high rates, the big down payments, all the qualifications to get into new loans. It's just very difficult right now. So these creative deals are super attractive. If you can get the right terms, you can wholesale these for a premium. So Chris, what I want to do with you on this video is I want to hyper focus on dispo, selling these deals to cash buyers and investors. And one thing that I see that you're tremendous at doing, really well at doing, is marketing these creative deals. And if you think about it, a creative deal's got a lot of moving parts. You know, there's a lot of things that go into, is this a good deal? It's not just one thing. You know, like traditional wholesale, where you get a low cash offer, it's all about, okay, well, what's ARV? What's repairs? That's all I really need to know. With creative, I think there's like 8 or 9 different things you look at, and all of those things work together to make it a deal or not a deal. And some things might be better than others, so some things offset to still make it a good deal. For example, a really low entry fee might trump a little bit higher interest rate, or so and so on, right? So, so kind of what I want to do first, Chris, is let's just go through real quickly and talk about those 8 or 9. I think I've kind of identified 9 different things that go into a creative deal to determine can we create terms that are going to be attractive to a buyer? So, and I'll just kind of go through these, Chris, and you help me identify, you know, what we're looking for typically in a deal. And again, keep in mind, everybody, it could be a long-term rental situation or a short-term rental. And so you want to kind of find best use, right? So like, if I'm going to take this to the market, what's the best use of this property that a long-term buy and hold investor is going to want to use it for? And so like a lot of the deals we're doing, Chris, are a lot of them, because we're in the panhandle, are really good vacation rental properties, but some of them not so much. That's more of a long-term rental property. So we're going to kind of look at things based on what the best use is. Sometimes it could be either way, and you got to get both options.
For sure.
So I think most people think of when it comes to rental property, because that's typically who we're selling to, is a buy and hold who wants to rent it. So number one is usually cash flow. Like, okay, does this, if I take over the terms of this deal, does it cash flow? And what do you like to see in cash flow typically?
Yeah. So kind of the rule of thumb that I think I've chatted about this before is we try to shoot for 10% cash on cash invested. So meaning, you know, if the total entry into a deal, let's say, is, you know, 40 grand, you know, net after everything monthly, we're trying to make that property net cash flow $400 a month. So that's 10% cash on cash invested, because when I go to sell these deals to buy and hold guys, they're trying to get 10% on their money. Now, if you're not getting 10%, throw it in the stock market, you know, like, So we're trying to make sure that these deals are hitting 10% cash on cash invested. And that includes your assignment fee, arrears, agent costs, transaction coordination fees, all in. You know, if it's 80 grand, that thing should net $800 a month, you know, after accounting for expenses.
Yeah, totally. So cash flow, guys, cash flow is a big one. It's kind of the first thing people look at. What Chris is explaining is the cash flow is going to determine your cash on cash return. So like Chris, you and I were talking about a deal we tried to dispo for one of my students, and it had like a break even cash flow, which made, or $100 a month, which made the cash on cash with the high entry fee 1%. So at a 1% cash on cash return, that's not an attractive deal. It's going to be hard to move that deal, which we weren't able to move it because it just didn't have favorable terms. Right. So kind of the way you want to look at this is the higher the cash flow, the better the cash on cash return is going to be, and the more attractive the deal. Now, that doesn't mean you can't wholesale a zero cash flowing or even a negative cash flowing deal. We've done it, but it's going to have some really cool other things going on for it to make that work. So, for example, we wholesaled a zero cash flow deal, but it had like a 2.9 fixed interest rate, and it was like a really low entry fee. Yeah. So a buy and hold investor is like, it doesn't cash flow, but I'm going to play the long game because my interest rate's fixed and it's super low. And in a couple of years, I'll start to cash flow, assuming rents go up, right? So they started to justify it being a deal because of other factors, right? So anyway, we got cash flow. You mentioned entry fee. So we in creative, we call it an entry fee. And that's the total cash outlay that's going to need to be at closing to get into the deal. So, you know, a lot of times we like to talk about, you know, 0% you know, creative deals. And the reality is those are a needle in a haystack. Because if you're wholesaling, first of all, your wholesale fee is part of the entry fee now. So that's got to come from somewhere outside of the deal. So that's cash coming to the deal. You're always going to have closing fees. Those could be a couple $1,000s. You could have commissions. You could have arrears. You could have a little bit of down payment to the seller. Right? Those are the main things you have. Closing fees, commissions, any kind of cash to the seller, wholesale fee, arrears, which would mean if they're behind on payments, penalties,
it's or anything. Very common thing. In sub two stuff. Is and people who are, you know, 10 to 12,000 behind, and that's that's not really an expense that you can just waive, you know?
Right. That's cash that has to be paid at closing. The thing is about the entry fee is, if you think about it, I like to compare creative to traditional financing. So if an investor were looking at that deal and they were going to go get like a DSCR, you know, rental loan or an investor loan, they would have to put down 25 to 30% to buy that property using a traditional type of loan at a 9% or 8% interest rate, right? So we want to beat that. Otherwise, why would they even think about creative if they can just go get a normal loan and beat it with a normal loan? So, you know, that's why, like, what's your goal with an entry fee typically that you try to be at?
We try to be, you know, less than 10% is kind of our goal, but like we can move stuff at, you know, a 15% entry fee, especially if it's, you know, a saucy deal, a great, I mean, a newer home, cash flows well, that's definitely not out of the question. You know, if for us, really, if it hits that, you know, cash on cash return that we're trying to shoot for, it's usually pretty easy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you can go up to maybe max 25% on an entry fee. But as soon as you go past that, your deal is going to get harder and harder to dispo, because as it goes past 10, 15% total entry fee on a deal, anything as you go over that, it starts to become less and less sexy because it's more cash into the deal, which means it's probably going to affect your cash flow or at least your cash on cash. Right. So again, there's no right or wrong answer. That's what's so challenging sometimes about creative is it's a compilation of all these different things that are going to all add up. So I try to think of it like a scoring system, you know, like if a 25% entry fee is like a 10, like that's bad, or maybe the other way around, that's a zero is bad and 10 is good. You know, anything 10% is going to be a high score. Anything at 25% or higher is going to be a bad score on that one line item of entry fee, right? So again, we're just kind of walking through, guys, some different things to be aware of. Interest rate, Chris, what kind of interest rate do you try to stay under?
We're trying to stay under 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And really, for us, it's just because those are the homes that are most likely to cash flow. I'm not saying there's not deals out there at 7% that don't cash flow. I'm just saying, you know, with the average house that we're looking at, like we've got a triplex under contract in Jacksonville that had a 5.25% rate, and we found it harder to dispo because higher rate, that payment's higher. You know, usually if you're sub 5%, there's a really strong chance that you'll be able to dispo that. Now, if you're going to go with the strategy of kind of like a sub tail, you know, if you actually go take that deal down and then re-advertise it to the market, you know, there's a lot of retail buyers who aren't like investors at all who would love to take, you know, a 5% mortgage right now.
Definitely.
I'm not saying you can't sell those deals. There's just more of a financial commitment if you have to actually take it down and close on it.
Yeah. So I love that. So 5%. And again, that's market specific. So that's like as of this recording, because of the environment of interest rates we're in. If, you know, in a couple of years from now, when we burn through all of these 2%, 3%, and 4% rates, and now we're talking to people that have 7% and 8% rates, obviously the environment around rate is going to change as time goes on.
For sure.
Right. So that's what's making creative finance right now, as of today. And I think probably the next year or two, it's going to be a very hot strategy because there's these existing 2%, 3%, 4% rates. As time goes on, those are going to become fewer and fewer because everybody buying into rates now are paying high, or they're getting higher rates, which means in 2 years from now, when we're talking to somebody moving and they got a, you know, a 7% rate, well, you know, now we're at a different conversation, right? So,
yeah.
But again, right now, as of this recording, if you can be under 5%, you're going to be very attractive. The further down you go, the more attractive, the higher score you're going to get on interest rate, the more you go above 5%. The harder it is, the lower score you're going to get on that particular item of interest rate. And also rates aren't just all looked at equally, right? You want to also look at, is it a fixed rate? A variable rate that's going to adjust is going to be very scary for an investor to buy. And that's going to really hurt you, which takes us to the next thing, which is a balloon. Now, if you don't know what a balloon is, it means whatever the amortization is of your loan, a balloon means it's due in full at that time period. So for example, if you have a 30-year rate, that means your payments are based on 30 years. But if you have a one-year balloon, then whatever your remaining balance is in 1 year is due in full, which means you either have to sell it or refinance. So balloons are very, I see balloons get skipped over all the time. Like I look at creative deals and no one talks about the balloon. And one of the first things I ask is, dude, what's the balloon on this? Oh, the balloon. Okay. You know, 1 year, dude, that's not a deal at 1 year. That's going to be really hard to move that deal.
Yeah.
So what do you like to see in a balloon?
Yeah. So I've kind of noticed a trend, you know, really, if you've got a smart agent who's a good fiduciary on the other side, they will really advocate for a balloon for the seller, because they're thinking about it, right? They're like, oh, wait, well, that's going to be in their name for 29 more years.
Yeah.
You know, an agent who just wants to get a check, you know, a lot of times that's something, and probably it's an education piece that they haven't, you know, really thought through. They won't even bring it up. So ideally, you know, the best deals are no balloons.
Yeah.
You
know? Most of our direct to sellers don't have balloons because no one's asking for it. So we don't do a balloon.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, 10 years is like, that's still considered really good. We don't really like to tie up anything less than 5-year balloons. Yeah. If we can avoid it. Now, again, there's always moving components. If it's just got an amazing rate, insane cash flow, you know, but you know, if it's going to be less than 5 years, we like to typically add a provision, that just essentially says, in the event that the property doesn't appraise for at least the original purchase price, we get an auto extension of 2 years on the balloon, because you're protecting your downside or your end buyer's downside. If in the event, you know, we're invaded by aliens and values pull back 20%, you know, they'll be able to refinance.
Yeah. Another strategy around the balloon is I have a seller right now, and they're really stuck on a 12-month balloon, and everything else about the deal is amazing, except the freaking 1-year balloon. So I said, what if I did at the end of 12 months, what if I did a principal pay down and I gave you a chunk of cash? And they were like, they were cool with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to, creative is creative. Like, creative isn't just about a creative deal like a seller finance or subject to. It's also you thinking outside the box. And the better you're able to think outside the box, the more you can come up with solutions to, you know, make deals work. Right. So, okay. So we got a balloon. 5 year is your kind of your threshold. Anything less than 5 year is going to make your deal less attractive. Anything over 5 years is going to make your deal more attractive. Amortizations. A lot of people aren't really thinking that amortization is a term that you can negotiate and structure. Clearly, if it's subject to, it's not, because you're taking over an existing loan already in place. But on seller finance, you're creating a new loan with the seller. And so amortization is one of those things that you can play with. So I use it as a negotiating tool. So, for example, let's say the seller's like, I want more money down. Then I'll say, okay, more money down is going to make this deal a little tougher. I need you to make my payments lower so my cash flow is bigger. And the way we can do that is we can do a 40-year or even a 50-year amortization. So think about what that's doing. It's making your principal and interest payment get way smaller, which means your monthly cash flow is going to be way bigger. So why do we do that? Well, it's to offset maybe something else that's not as attractive, like the down payment or something else.
Yeah, we did that on that Panama City deal that you did a video on. It was a 5.5% interest rate.
Yeah.
And we did a 45-year AM, and we still assigned it for, I think, $22,000 on that one. But it's because that property at that time was at like a 15% cash on cash return, because we increased the amortization, reducing that monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And for, you know, smart buy and hold guys, they'll realize that, you know, even on a 30-year AM, you know, like the first 5 years are almost interest only anyways. So like if you're, you know, not planning on holding this forever, you know, it could be really smart to do, you know, a larger amortization or an interest only loan if you care about cash flow like that. Or
that's the other thing. Interest only will also get your payment smaller, because now you're not paying any towards principal. So we do that quite a bit too. Because again, we're not thinking long-term. We're not thinking I'm going to be in this loan for 30 years. We're thinking, how do I create as much cash flow as I can today? And I'll worry about the payoff. You know, I'll worry about principal pay down later. Like, I'm not as worried about that right now. I'm more worried about getting a good cash flowing deal today. And for so sure. Again, this is like, put yourself in the shoes of a buyer, right? If you were going to buy this property, own it and hold it, what would be attractive about it to you? What would make it a deal that you would want to hold? So like, that's another one, amortization, tax benefit. So tax benefit is one I see overlooked all the time. This is one where if you start to understand your buyers, and if you start to work with buyers who are buying for the tax benefit, meaning they want the write-offs of the depreciation that they get on their taxes. We've got a buyer that we're bringing deals to, Chris, that's from Utah, one of your contacts from Utah, and their number one reason for buying is for the tax write-offs that they're getting by owning that real estate. We're not going to go too far into that right now, but they're less concerned about cash flow. They're less concerned about all these other things. They're more concerned about buying enough real estate to offset this big tax liability that they have, which is huge. So if you can showcase the tax benefit, that's also helpful for certain buyers.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And that's why our December was honestly so massive. A large portion is I had like six people hit me up saying, hey, you got any good rentals that I could use for my depreciation before the end of the year? Mm-hmm. These guys, like, they did not look at the cash flow at all. They'd be like, oh, that house is going to save me 70 grand on my taxes. Let's run it. You know, like, yeah. They were not like dissecting the deal. All they cared about was convenience and the fact that, you know, they could count on me to get them a write-off before the end of the year.
Well, if you think about it, you know, if by buying that asset, if it saves you $70,000 in taxes, that's the same as making $70,000.
Yeah. Right? How long would it take you to get 70K in net cash flow? You know, if it breaks, those are the kind of buyers you can sell break-even deals to.
Yeah.
So usually they've got the cash outlay and the foresight that, you know, the tax benefit's more important than the monthly cash flow.
Now that type of buyer typically wants a very hands-off property. So they're going to be looking at, you know, class A type of neighborhood, maybe like fully furnished, fully renovated type Airbnbs. They're going to like those, you know, they're not going to want a project. They're not going to want something low income. They're going to want something hands off. Cause again, they're not looking to be active investors in the deal. They're looking to get tax benefits. So again, it's all about understanding how you structure these deals so that they're attractive to buyers. We got a couple more condition that kind of goes along with that last one. A lot of these properties, Chris, that we're wholesaling that are creative, these are like A-plus properties. I mean, some of them are in mint condition. They're like either fairly new. One of them was like built in 2019, fully furnished, right on the beach, like amazing property. Condition is something that your buyers are going to also factor. So if you could do creative finance on fully distressed properties or fully retail properties, just understand that whatever your condition level is, that's going to be a factor that's considered by your buyer.
Yeah, for sure. Those sell like hotcakes all the time. I mean, the pristine ones, but you know, we just sold a fixer where we blasted it out initially as a cash deal and we didn't have any movement on it. We restructured it. So we were taking the existing debt sub 2 and it sold next day. And the reason is, you know, a buyer doesn't have to get financing for the purchase. They only need to get financing for the rehab. So, you know, depending on the asset class that you're working with, regardless, sub 2 is going to make it more attractive.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I think the last thing on the list, which we've talked about a little bit throughout this, is price. Price is probably with creative, it's funny because price is everything when you're talking about all cash offers. It's the most important thing. It's all you really care about is, can I buy at a good price? With creative, it's like of all the things we've talked about, it's probably the last thing people look at.
Yeah. I've not really had any objections in terms of, you know, price. That's not necessarily something that my buyers are looking at. They're looking at cash flow. They're looking at how good that interest rate is. But yeah, price is not necessarily an objection I hear all too often.
Yeah. So Chris, before we jump in, I hope that you guys watching this, I hope that kind of gave you a really good overview of kind of what you're thinking about doing. I did a video where we break down these different things. You're going to want to learn how to structure deals. So we can give you a free calculator that will help you kind of plug in the numbers. I've got a creative financing like hack guide that you can go through. Chris also created a really cool thing, which is like a scaling system that goes through, you know, interest rate, rehab, entry fee, all the different things. And Chris, if you're okay, well, we can give that to you guys as well. Kind of a guide to think, you know, how good is my deal based on these different factors? But again, we wanted to kind of do a quick overview on that, but really I want to focus this video on dispo, selling your creative finance deal, wholesaling that deal. So you got to put the deal together. You got to structure the deal. You got to know how to do that. Yeah. But I think a lot of people, especially coming from some of the big creative finance groups out there, you know, I'm really good friends with Pace Morby. He does a tremendous job teaching people how to get into these deals. But I think there's a real lack of understanding and a real lack of education on how to sell a creative finance deal. And I think that's just as important probably as structuring the deal, because if you can't help your buyer understand your creative structure, first of all, if you structure it poorly, no one's going to be interested. But it's not just about structuring it well. It's also about showing people the structure in a way that they can digest it quickly. You know, like I'm on a lot of lists and I look at a lot of deals, and I can kind of get through deals in about 5 seconds to know if I want to look at this further. You know, like ARV, repairs, price, you know, like I got my own little filters of like running through stuff fast. Creative takes a second because you're kind of looking at a lot of different things. But the more complicated and difficult you make your creative deal to understand, then buyers just move on to another deal. They pass right through it. They don't even give it the time of day.
No.
So, Chris, you're really good at this. So I'd love for you to show, maybe we use a couple of your recent deals and you walk through the psychology behind how you market and dispo a creative deal.
Yeah. Let me share my screen real quick. Perfect. Okay. So we're on our, so we run a local Facebook group here, the Florida Panhandle Real Estate Investor Group. So this is where we post all of our.
Show your page on the screen. Guys, do me a favor. Go join Chris's page. Chris, do you want investors on there that are not in the Panhandle or just the local?
No, investors anywhere. We'd love to have you. We do, you know, monthly calls. We talk about creative finance. We talk about strategies that are working here, and we post a lot of good deals in here. I don't ever approve anything on the admin that isn't a good deal, but we don't let random hard money lenders post. So yeah, we've got a lot of good stuff.
So guys, join it's Florida Panhandle. You'll see some great deals on there. Our deals are in there. Especially if you're a buyer and you're looking to acquire, buy and hold creative. We're not just creative. There's all deals in here, but this is good. This is going to be I think, Chris, this is going to be one of the top Florida real estate investor groups on Facebook, because you're doing things right. You're educating the community. You're building community. There's lots of conversation going on here. It's going to be an awesome group here. And it's brand new. Like it's really phenomenal that it's grown so quickly.
Yeah. We're excited about it. So here we have Corey is my dispo manager. And here's a deal he just posted. It's one that we have in Pensacola. You know, he does a great job laying out just the very basics, the overview of the address, you know, age of the mechanicals, so on and so forth. But the real, you know, nitty gritty is he bolds the material fact about the creative finance structure, because that's what's selling this deal. You know, it's not necessarily the condition of the house. I mean, it's okay, you know, this one, but it's not, you know, brand new.
So Chris, go back up real quick to the top of this post here. So I'm following your form. So guys, look at the format. Quick property overview. Now, you give the address. I love this. Like the last thing you want to do is not give an address and then make people work for it. Like call you and contact you and say, what's the address? I hate that. If I got to reach out to a wholesaler as a buyer and say, freaking give me the address because I'm sort of interested or I might be interested, you're making me jump through hoops, and that's going to piss me off right out of the gate.
Yeah, just file a memorandum, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. If you guys don't have one, we'll give you one. File a memorandum. It'll make sure no one backdoors you. It protects your contract in the deal. And then you got size, your build, layout, like floor plan, close of escrow, and then some factors that might need to be considered, like you got a roof thing in there. How is the HVAC, water heater? So a couple things about it. So that's kind of just like a basic overview of the property. Then you go into location highlights. Okay, what's so special about this property's location? Hospital, airports, you know. If you don't have anything about your deal, then you don't have anything. But you want to try to highlight like location. Why is this a good location? You know, near the beach, near the airbase. And then you get into financial overview, and this is kind of like the meat and potatoes of what someone's looking for, right? So why are they, what about your deal do they need to see at a quick glance without having to open up a calculator and go through a bunch of financials? What are you highlighting for them that they want to see? And so walk us through that. Like you got right in the top there, entry fee. So right away you're saying, okay, guys, you know, this is a low entry fee. So that's kind of like, I think probably the first thing people think is like, okay, well, how much cash is it going to take me to get into this deal? If that's at 138,000, people would scroll right by and keep going, right? Like that's what they're looking for, the entry fee.
Yeah. So we always try to put the entry fee, you know, close to the top on the financial information, just because, you know, if the dude's only got 50K, he's going to, you know, immediately eliminate all the ones that are more than that. So this is 38K right at the top, out the door, closing cost, transaction coordinator, or, you know, that kind of stuff. We put it right at the top. So
you put plus closing and TC. So one of the strategies that we do is we try to pass the TC cost onto the buyer.
Yeah.
And guys, if you're doing creative finance, Chris and I highly, highly recommend that you get a transaction coordinator. We've got one that you can use probably. So leave a comment if that's something you need help with. We can help you with that. But the transaction coordinator is just going to make your life so much easier with creative, because let them handle all the paperwork and the closing and bringing all the parties together and managing that and you know, power of attorneys and all the things that need to happen on a creative deal. But doesn't mean that you need to pay that fee, pass that on as a closing fee, but you're making sure that they're clear. Like it says in here, plus closing, because we don't really know if it, what is it, 2,500, 3,500? We don't really know, but most people are like, okay, well, I got a couple thousand in closing fees. Maybe I got $1,000 or whatever in a transaction coordination fee. Let them tack that on. But the 38K, you know that number because that's covering very specific things. Now, again, right now you're highlighting, this is your marketing. This is posted on a Facebook page, or this might be like in your investor list or your email, whatever you're doing for marketing. So at this point, you're not breaking down, okay, well, there's $6,000 in commissions and there's this and this and this. You're just trying to give a really good overview on your job, on your deal posting.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have those kind of material facts, like the financials of the property, the PITI, you know, market rents.
PITI, guys, is principal, interest, taxes, and insurance.
Yes.
So do you always combine those two or those four things?
Yeah, I always keep it that way. Yeah. Just two, because Florida does have some insurance and tax intricacies. So just to keep it simple, I just leave it as PITI. And then we kind of give, typically we do the short-term rental projection and we pull that off of AirDNA. A long-term rental rate, we use Rentometer. And then we go onto the HUD site and find the 2024 fair market rent that they're willing to pay for Section 8 as well.
And you provide that, Chris, in the package in your Google Drive folder, those comps.
Yes.
I love that you do that. A lot of people don't do that. They just kind of throw out this rental number. And then if you're the buyer, you're like, well, are these valid numbers? So you give comps to those rental numbers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we do. We back up what we, you know, we're putting out there. I'm not trying to put out fluff. I don't want to sell anybody a bad deal. And you know, we make sure we're accurate, you know, with our numbers. And then we always, I think this one, so typically if somebody will inquire then and they want more info, that's when we'll send them our Google Drive link.
Yep.
And that will, you know, that has mortgage statements, that has, you know, the pro forma, the rent comps that you're referring to,
pictures,
people into the door and get them excited about it. And then they'll typically reach out to my dispo manager, Corey, who will then send them that kind of stuff. Cause most sub two buyers, they'll want to see a mortgage statement. Just, you know, to confirm, you know, what actual the monthly payment is and the loan amount and see if
it's you could provide it. Like I've seen you do it where the Google Drive link is here. And again, the Google Drive folder is going to have all of the validation of your deal. So it might have a copy of your contract. You might have, you know, an estimated repairs, or like if it needs a new roof, maybe a quote from a contractor, your comps, your financial breakdown, all the things that a buyer is going to want to see to do proper due diligence, that goes in a Google Drive folder that can be provided either as a link in your post or separate when you get inquiries.
So we've actually moved away from doing, because we used to just do the link here.
Yeah.
But then we realized we're like, oh, wait, like we're not getting any of the information from the guy who is remotely interested
in the details.
So that's why we've actually just put recently Corey's information here, because they will typically message him for the additional info. Because if this deal isn't a fit for him, we'll then have him in our CRM to, you know, target him for other deals, you know, in the future. If he wants something in Panama City, we now have that info.
I love that. But you're still giving them enough here to make an educated decision on moving further in due diligence.
Yes. Yeah. We're not really teasing them. We give them everything they need, but you know, the real buyers will want a mortgage statement. They will want to see the solar paperwork, if there's solar paper, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So going back up to your financials, you got short-term rental projections, you got long-term rental rates, and then you got a 2024 Section 8 fair market rent. Okay. So that's another, you know, income number that could help somebody feel good about what kind of income this can produce.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times it just also helps support our long-term rental rates that we're advertising. Like, oh, okay. You know, if the HUD is, you know, suggesting Section 8 fair market rate, 1747, I could believe between 1700 and 1900 a month at long-term rental. But we do go in and pull comps for long-term rentals.
Now, why the mortgage balance? This is another one that I see a lot of posts that don't have that. And then everyone starts asking it. So, you know, and by the way, guys, as you learn this and people start asking you for things, that's when you learn, right? You learn the best way to learn is from your cash buyers. So when they start asking you questions, you should be thinking to yourself, okay, how do I take this feedback? And the next deal I dispo, I provide better information because I'm now getting feedback about what they want to see.
Yeah. And we've just found people want, that's just something they commonly ask for. And we'd rather put it here too, because they'll, you know, depending on the deal too, their equity position, some buyers care about, some don't. But we figured if we just have it here, it eliminates that question. And we're trying to reduce the amount of DMs we're responding to and questions. Give as much as humanly possible for efficiency's sake, because you know, when we've got several deals going on, it will bog Corey down all day responding to these same questions. So we're just trying to be as transparent as humanly possible.
Then you got total purchase price.
Yep.
And then, and that's taking, because this is sub two, that's adding everything up, right? So it's adding the loan you're taking over plus all the fees.
Yeah. Arrears plus our assignment fee plus the transaction coordination fee. And that would be, that's your cost basis. So the reason we also like to add that too, because this one's actually geared more towards, you know, a quick turnaround for a flip if somebody wanted to do that, because it has equity and and the condition isn't terrible. Somebody could pretty cheaply come in and spruce this up and make a quick buck if that's their intention. So that's why we have that there, so they know what their cost basis is.
Or the way that condition is it's like the perfect rental. Someone could literally throw a renter in there and not touch it. Yes. You know what I mean? So they got a couple options. So giving them, here's your total price, and then here's your ARV. Now, sometimes if they're super clean, like some of these vacation rentals that we're doing, you know, there's no equity at all, and it still works. It's still a great deal.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So it depends on the deal. You're absolutely right. So on ones that have equity, though, we advertise it. You know, if it doesn't have any equity, you know, obviously I'm not going to, you know, shout from the top of the mountain, no equity. But if it's, you know, meaningful to do so, we will advertise that.
And then minimum 5K earnest money. And I love that, Chris, like no games, you know, like we're not going to take a buyer who wants to put $500 down as earnest money. So that lets that buyer know, hey, if you're interested in this deal, don't even talk to us if you're not going to put at least $5,000 down in earnest money.
Yeah. And that's kind of a non-negotiable for us now, especially for these creative deals. And what we've kind of just learned, there's a lot of hogwash buyer, or not real buyers, who are like super into creative finance right now, where they're, you know, maybe it's not even them providing the EMD. So we just want to make sure, like, hey, you know, I don't care what you're doing to finance this deal, but you're putting $5,000 down
or more. Like we did one that got $10,000. Like we'll ask for $10,000 sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if the deal's smoking and it's a legit buyer, they won't have any issue doing that.
Yeah. You know? It's kind of your weed out factor if you've got a legit buyer. Like a red flag, the biggest red flag ever is if you're asking for $5,000 earnest money and they want to give you 500. That's a red flag that's a flaky buyer, because $500 is not enough to commit them to closing. They're going to walk if the slightest hiccup and they walk.
Well, and the thing too, it's an opportunity cost thing too. Like if you waste, you know, a month with these people and they only have five $500, you know, on the line, you actually have way more because you could have found a different buyer who was actually legit. And instead, all you're going to make is that $5K EMD or $500, you know? Yeah. So when you commit to a buyer, you have to think about like, all right, this guy's got to be legit because there is actual loss on your end in terms of potential profit you're missing out on.
So then next you've got profitable exit strategies. And we talked a little bit about those. You've got a couple options in there. You could do a quick fix and flip on a light rehab. You could hold this. It could work for long-term, mid-term, short-term. And then I love this like investor's edge. Explain this a little bit. Like what's this highlighting what?
Yeah. So what Corey did here, and he's actually been the one who's been kind of implementing some of these different categories. It's just like the most compelling part of it. So it's like, you know, this is a 3.5% interest rate and you don't have just one exit. Like if it's a low equity sub two deal, you know, you're going to probably rent it or that's a wrap guy. But for this, you know, you could do a light rehab and make a quick buck. You can keep it as an awesome long-term rental because you're in a great location. I mean, he mentioned above that you're near the hospitals and the airport. So he like highlights like the best little things about it. And he puts it here at the bottom.
Cool. Yeah, that's a cool idea. I like that. High rental demand. Okay. And then just his contact information. And so like if you're doing your own dispo, you would put your information there. And then one thing that we're really good about doing is, you know, when we dispo, the idea here is we want to get in front of as many potential buyers as possible. So like we go on all the groups, right? Then there's, I mean, how many would you say? Probably dozens or over a dozen?
Yeah, dozens for
dozens
sure.
Dozens of groups to post your deals in that allow you to do that. Make sure you're allowed to post deals in those investor groups.
Yeah.
You want to get in the right communities because the thing about creative financing is, no longer is it limited to geography like typical, a lot of typical, you know, buy and hold and flipping, you're kind of looking for the local people. Creative, you're kind of open to the entire market because people are okay to cross state lines to buy creative deals.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's imperative to make sure you get them out in as many groups as humanly possible. So we do like all the different creative financing ones, all the local ones, and then we'll get it blasted out on Investor Lift. To get as many eyes on it as humanly possible.
And by the way, speaking of that, it brings me up to something here is, you know, Chris and I have a cartel level Investor Lift account, which is the highest level. I think there's only 50 allowed that they even do, which means we have access to, I think it's like 4 million buyers nationwide. Yeah. And we've got our dispo processes, you know, pretty dialed in. So if you guys have, it doesn't even have to be creative, I guess, but if you guys are looking to JV, you know, if it's not a deal, we're not going to even put it out there. So don't bring us stuff that you can't dispo in your local market. Like what, one thing we don't want you to do is you've exhausted every possible buyer you can, and then you bring it to us thinking we're going to pull a rabbit out of a hat for you. But if you're heavily focused on acquisition and you're not in a place yet to do dispo, we could JV with you, partner with you on that deal and dispo those deals. And, but you know, make sure you're kind of learning from this video about what needs to be attractive for that deal for us to dispo it. And we will get a buyer if it's a, if it's meets all the things and it's a good deal.
Yeah. And we've got a few also wholesalers here locally, we just exclusively dispo for, and they've told us how helpful it's been because, you know, they can just solely keep their foot on acquisitions when, or, you know, they were riding this roller coaster that, you know, they were all in on acquisitions and they would completely lift off the gas as soon as they got a deal to go to dispositions. And now their business is inconsistent because they're not all the way down on acquisitions at all times. They're shifting back and forth between these two very important parts of their business.
Yeah. Love that. And we're working on some, you know, some good processes for you to kind of bring the deals so that we can underwrite them quickly. So we'll put some links in the description, guys, for some of this information we've talked about. Again, we've got a really cool creative financing hacks guide, which kind of gives you an overview on how to structure creative, a calculator you can use, maybe a portal that you could upload deals to us. But reach out to us if you've got a deal that you need help to dispo that's creative, and we'll get that deal moved for you. If it's a deal, we'll move it. And let's really improve the way that you market your deals, right? Like if you follow Chris and go ahead and join the Florida Panhandle, look at how he's structuring his deals. And Corey, shout out to Corey, doing a phenomenal job. But and look at other places, like look at some of the top wholesalers that dispo creative deals, and study how they market their deals. Like study Chris and how he does it, so that way you can do similar types of deals. And you'll find that if you can actually compile this information in a very organized manner, like Chris has done here, this is easy to follow, easy to read. You know, it's progressive. It's highlighting the things in sort of like an order. There's like a methodology behind this. And you're not making me, there's nothing here now that I don't know enough to do further due diligence, right? So from here, if I'm an interested buyer, I should have everything I need now to then say, okay, well, I need to look at further pictures, or, you know, I need to kind of do a little bit more, but I'm very interested. I've got enough data here to make a legit educated decision. So let's look at one more example.
And I've got a real quick hack for your audience too. You can actually take my deal, copy all of this, all the text, paste it into ChatGPT, and then type in another paragraph, all the information on your deal, and just say, hey, replicate how this Facebook post was made for my deal. And it will spit it out. We've been using AI a lot, so we don't have to consistently redo this. We'll just take one post and tell ChatGPT, hey, here's the new info on our new deal. Replicate this prior post. And it will spit this out in a nice, clean, concise, consistent format. So
yeah, I love that. I mean, one of the things like Chris and I regularly get on training meetings with Investor Lift and the team over at Investor Lift, and sometimes we'll spend what, Chris, an hour just working on the post.
Yeah.
And what you're saying, when you're saying it, an emoji here, moving this around. And I see so many wholesalers, they're like flying by the seat of their pants or slapping stuff out there. And guys, you are in sales. This is marketing. The better you market your deal, the more eyeballs are going to be drawn to it, are going to be interested in it. And you're going to get more open rates, more interest, more buyers. And the more buyers you get, the higher price it sells for. And like, that's how you win. You've got to think now like a copywriter, like a marketer, because it all matters. It matters big time.
Yeah, we're a sales and marketing company before a real estate company, you know. So here's that other example that I was kind of telling you about. And then I've actually got the folder right here too, if people are interested in seeing what that looks like as well, that has additional information. But this was a subject to hybrid deal we did in Pensacola. And it was just beautiful. It can't get any better than this.
What did we wholesale this one for?
$30,000.
Yeah. And look at, you got $20,000. It went 15 over.
Yeah. This was a home run. So, Corey, again, he goes into the top, he kind of gives the material facts, the address, bed, bath, when close of escrow was supposed to be. He gave market value on this one, total purchase price, that interest rate.
Look at the rate on that, guys, 2.25. So that's going to draw a crowd.
Yes. So these are the deals that you will get excitement on.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a 2.25% interest rate. And then the seller was actually financing the rest of the equity at 0% for a 9-year balloon. So just total home run. So he made sure to bold all of this stuff. And it looks like he missed some of this here, but we got the gist of it. And these are the kind of deals that you'll go over your blast out price, so long as you're.
And this was nuts. So correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, this was active on the market, not selling. So think about this, guys, on the market, not selling. Chris comes in and structures a, didn't we pay over asking price on this one?
No, you're thinking of the duplex we did in Panama City.
Okay.
This is a different one, but that one we did pay over on as well. If we wanted to pull that one up, I could probably do
it. But this one doesn't have any equity either. I mean, not really.
Yeah, no, it didn't. And he gave us favorable terms. He left it furnished.
Yeah.
And we were able to make this one happen. This was a $30,000 fee. But
guys, if you're not sure what hybrid means, it's combining subject to and creating a second note to finance some of the equity or some of the additional money that the seller wants. So just because the seller wants a higher price doesn't mean you have to pay the difference from the existing note and the price the seller wants. Doesn't mean you have to pay that in cash. You can structure where you finance that. And Chris financed it $40,000 at zero interest over in a 9-year balloon. Now, why would a seller do that? Because at some point in time in the next 9 years, he's going to get another $40,000 out of the deal and he's okay to wait. He'd rather get that high price. He doesn't need all the money right now and get a high price and eventually get all the money, but not necessarily right this minute.
And here, just so you can see, Corey went in and did the math on, you know, what the balloon amount will be at the end of the 9 years for this 40-year note or a $40,000 note. And so at the end of the 9 years, somebody has, oh my gosh, a whopping $4,000 balloon. But those are things people want to see, right? It's just, it gives them all of the facts on the deal that they might want to see. Do you want them to hop into the link or?
Yeah, show the link real quick, just so people can see, you know, a fast way to do this.
Yeah, so real quick, I'll just hop into this and we'll blast through each folder real quick. So I think the first one I'll start is just the deal structure. So he, you know, re-emphasizes everything in just a sheet that talks about market value, that your total purchase price, mortgage balance, the interest rate, the PITI, when that's maturing, how much is going to the seller, how much is our assignment, and then the total entry on this deal. And then he had info on the second as well. So I don't know any other questions a buyer would have on the structure. I feel like he does a pretty good job at outlaying everything that they need to know about what's going into this deal.
One thing, Chris, that maybe mentioned to Corey that he could do too is if that total entry fee is a low percentage of the total price, that's a highlight feature too. Like, hey, it's $80,000. And at first glance, someone might be thinking, oh, that's a high entry fee. It's not.
No.
You know, entry fees all relative to the total price. So, you know, if you're hitting that 10, 15%, if you're ever under 10%, you need to be shouting that from the rooftops, like 9% total entry fee. And that's a huge, that catches a lot of attention.
And this is one, Jerry, that, you know, you can say that, you know, the entry fee is $80,000 on this one. I get that's higher than normal, but you've got a 2.25% interest rate, a 0% interest rate, fully furnished, built in 2019. Somebody will pay a premium for that.
And killer cash flow. That thing's cash flowing because it's got good Airbnb numbers.
Oh. Monster. As a long-term rental, I think it would cash flow over $1,000 a month. So then I think he adds just, you know, retail comps that have sold within a half a mile, similar age built of this property, just so people can have a brief understanding of their equity position on the deal when they're going into it.
And see how he did that, guys? It's just screen caps on a page, you know, super simple.
Yeah, I mean, he actually links them too. So if you want to go look at it, they can go in and, you know.
But look how, Chris, I mean, look how organized this is. It's a nice folder. It's all organized. Like you get a feel like you guys are legit and you know what you're doing. And that comes off. Like people want to work with someone and they're like, okay, these guys aren't cutting corners. They're not skipping things. They're very thorough. This is somebody that I could work with ongoing to buy deals from. That's the impression you want to have with your buyers.
Yeah, and especially on sub two, because a lot of them will have questions about due on sale and stuff like that. Make sure they're working with a professional company that knows what they're talking about. And then we give them access to the contract that has, you know, all of the sub two provisions that you need. Make sure that all the parties are protected. We've got a mortgage statement here. I don't know if you want me to go through all of these, Jerry, but...
you don't have to go through them. Just show the folders, their mortgage, photos.
Yeah,
pro forma. Yep. So there's your financials. Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And then the rental comps. So we're not, you know, pulling legs. You know, this has the median market rent, you know, the top 75 and the actual addresses of the properties that have been rented. And see, it says it's within a third of a mile. So they feel like, you know, everything is advertised.
Yeah. You've done your work. Yep.
On our work. Exactly.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So guys, that's how you dispo a creative finance deal. Now, same principles apply if it's just a traditional, you know, all cash deal. It's just you're going to have a whole lot less moving, you know, information because less detail. But similar type of idea, right? Highlighting the benefits, making sure you got a folder of all the info, good pictures.
Here's one of our cash deals. You know, it's you don't have the financial components, but you know, you're advertising more in the ARV, you know, still things about the area. Similar type thing, and he'll link the folder. So it's the same process. I just think if you can put enough information there that people don't have questions, and you know, this is the bold. It makes your job easier as somebody who's doing the dispo, less phone calls, less messages, you know, that kind of thing.
Love that. Yeah. So guys, if you would like to see more videos around creative finance, Chris and I would love to do some more content around this. Again, it's very fascinating to me, Chris, that I think creative finance, it's like, it's a little bit of a strategy in the wholesale community that's like under a rock a little. I don't know why. You know, same with novations and some of these other strategies. And I feel so strongly that if you don't have novation, creative finance, even retail listing in your toolbox, and you're just an all cash, low assignment strategy, like if that's the only method you're using in 2024 and on, I think you're going to be left in the dust because your competition is structuring these deals. So when you come in with that super low cash offer, which only applies to a small segment of distressed sellers, just know your competition is coming in behind you and they're offering these other solutions that are much more attractive given the seller situation. So, you know, you've got to be learning these other techniques or you're just going to miss out on a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, both those deals that we showed were deals that rejected our cash offers.
Overlooked by everybody.
Yeah. They rejected our offers. They had other wholesalers come through and immediately we knew where to pivot. You know, okay, you know, that's not going to work. What if, you know, we take over your existing debt and we get you a little bit more cash? And they were much more excited about something like that. So sometimes your cash offer is just not a fit for somebody, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Well, Chris, this was really helpful. I hope you guys got a lot of value out of this. Leave a comment, say, Chris, you're a flipping genius. And guys, if you've got deals that you need some help on dispo, don't bring them to us if you don't have an executed contract and you don't have all your crap together. We don't have time to look at stuff that's not well executed on the structure. So get that all together. Make sure you're hitting, you know, you're going through all those different things. It's okay if some things are off a little bit, as long as you've got some other things that are really attractive and it'll all work together, hopefully. If you can structure the sub two and the seller finance or a hybrid, and you can have enough of those terms being attractive, you know, below those thresholds that we talked about, then the market's going to eat that deal alive. They're going to love that deal.
Sure. 100%.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Chris. Thank you, guys. If you haven't, be sure to subscribe to the channel. We'll see you on the next video.
Awesome.